is it me you're looking for? I bet it is. It's Angela Scanlon here on the Graham Norton Radio Show with Waitrose. Today, show chef Martha is bringing the sweet stuff with the strawberry mallow mousse, which looks divine and apparently tastes divine too, which is important for food. And we'll be revisiting some of Graham's interviews over the years with the Knights of the Realm today. Keep your ear out for Sir Brian May and Sir David Suchet. Yes, let's get that mousse on the move, shall we? I think I need a sugar high. Show chef Martha, we're over to you.
This looks delicious. And I know you're on the home stretch and I don't know whether there's marshmallow in this, but it's called a strawberry mallow mousse.
Oh, yes.
My pregnancy craving was marshmallows.
Oh, really?
Anything gelatin based. Obviously, there was some, you know, cow need. I don't drink milk very much, so maybe I needed that side
in the gelatin,
you know,
the Haribos, the marshmallows,
jellies, like bowls of jelly, and then marshmallows, Turkish delight, anything that was gelatin based.
Yum.
Have you had any weird cravings?
Nothing super weird. No. I just had a lot of things that I went off a bit, which was a bit annoying, to be honest.
Yeah.
Like things I normally love, like croissants and pastries.
Oh, really?
I was like, no, I don't want them.
Oh,
but I feel like it's kind of coming in slightly now. Now I'm reaching the end, they're coming back a bit.
Yeah.
And I'm like, no, I love tea. Don't make me not like tea.
I love tea, don't ruin it. Okay, what's not to love? Right, so talk us through this. It's beautiful looking.
It's
aside
very
from
pink.
Anything else.
It got a lot of comments of, ooh, is that Angel Delight? when I was wheeling it through the studio. So it's a strawberry mallow mousse, and then it's got these milk chocolate. They're described as mendiants, which isn't actually a word I've heard before.
It's not actually a word at all, but it's fine.
I might be pronouncing it completely incorrectly, but I'm going to go with medal, or
let's
like a medallion is a better word.
Little circles of chocolate.
Little chocolate buttons. Posh
discs.
Chocolate buttons.
Boom, there you go.
So it's a strawberry mousse. And the reason that it's mallow is that instead of having to use gelatin leaves or powdered gelatin, we're using marshmallows as the base of the mousse to get it to set, which means it would actually be a really lovely thing to make with kids, or if people are listening and thinking, oh, I haven't got a Mother's Day dessert for this evening and I want one, this you can do quickly.
Easily.
Quickly, easily, stick it in the fridge. 3 hours later, you could be diving in to a bouncy mousse.
That sounds glorious. Well, Martha, you've exceeded yourself. I did think it might be a bit sickly sweet because it is a little sickly looking.
Anything pale pink, I think, does evoke that feeling of, oh my goodness, it's going to be so sweet, isn't it?
It's on the edge. But it's delicious. It's so light and it's quite like playful. I feel like kids particularly would absolutely love this.
I feel exactly the same. And it's actually got quite a lot of strawberries in. So the way you...
It's healthy, guys. Yeah. It's practically kale.
Basically. So healthy. Look, there's no sugar. There's plenty of sugar. But you start with strawberries. You want a whole 230-gram pack. Chop them up and put them into a saucepan with a little bit of water and then just a little bit of sugar and some vanilla extract. Simmer that for about 5 minutes till they become a bit pulpy and they start to mush down a little bit. Then we are blending that with a hand blender till it's really nice and smooth. Take it off the heat and in goes all of your pink and white marshmallows. So you can use the pink ones as well for this kind of mousse because you want that lovely pink rosy colour.
Blush.
Stir that until the marshmallows have all melted, then set that to one side and let it cool down to room temperature. And then all you need to do is whip up a pot of double cream and then fold those two mixtures together, put it into little individual glasses and then into the fridge for about 3 hours just to set and firm up. And you get this kind of marshmallow fluff kind of texture from it. Then whilst that's setting, you can make these little posh chocolate buttons by melting some milk chocolate, or you could use dark chocolate if you prefer that kind of slightly more grown-up taste. And then we're going to top those with little bits of pistachio and little bits of marshmallow, and I've gone with some freeze-dried raspberry pieces as well.
Gorgeous.
Which just adds a bit of like sparkle
and a bit of tartness to cut through as well, right?
Exactly.
Listen
so
to
simple.
Me fabulous. It's absolutely gorgeous and kind of foolproof, I say.
Yeah, I mean, apart from the blending, I feel that's the only part that's a bit like, okay, I need to get my blender out. But everything else is nice and simple. And people worry about mousse. They think, oh, it's not going to set properly. But the good thing about marshmallows is it will just go back to that marshmallowy texture once it gets back down to the right temperature.
Fantastic. If you want to see those... If you want to see that recipe and all of the rest, waitrose.com/showchef is where you'll get them all. And at Virgin Radio UK, you'll see them come to life, because I mean, to be fair, that is a work of art. Before I let you go, Martha, how was the baby shower yesterday?
Oh, it was lovely, thank you. Really special, really nice. Nice time to have my mum down, my sister and everyone.
Love.
Brilliant.
Well, enjoy it all. Lots of mousse, yeah. Bounce into that mousse, or dive into that bouncy mousse, more like.
Just get in the mood.
And also in my head, I'm like, I don't know whether am I like saying goodbye to you or
no,
am I?
No, I'm back. I'm back next.
Fine. Okay. Great. Oh, I thought you were. Yeah. Okay. That's what you said. Okay. TBC. So yeah. Okay. Cool. Right.
Well, you can do that. Well, hopefully.
Yeah. Okay. Okay.
Well. See you
okay.
Next
okay. Yeah. Perfect. Okay, well, we'll see you next week.
Yes.
Hopefully, yeah.
Okay. Fingers crossed. I'll
be nesting,
coming in.
Yeah? You will be. You'll be here with bells on. Or dragon bells behind you.
Angela Scanlon on the Graham Norton Radio Show.
Virgin Radio.
Still to come, we'll be hearing from Graham Norton and the wonderful Sir David Suchet. But first, let's hear from another legend, this time of rock, Sir Brian May.
Queen guitarist, astronomer and knight of the realm, Sir Brian May. Good afternoon, Brian.
Hello, Graham. How you doing?
I'm really well. How's the sir fitting? Does it feel odd or is it kind of sitting nicely?
It's bedding in quite well, thank you. Yeah, I like the sound of it. Really. People call me Sir Brian. Well, yeah, it's nice. You know, it's like getting a star at school. You know, you get the gold star and say, you've done quite well, you know. But I kind of feel like it's a responsibility to behave even more decently than I have been trying to up to now. You know what I'm saying?
Oh, you've led a faultless life, Brian.
Well, I mean, not exactly, but you know, you try to be an example and try to use what power that you've got for good, right?
You're not resting on your laurels. You are a very busy man. Let's start with the Starfleet project. So a lot of people won't know about this. It's 40 years since you went off to LA and recorded this music. Tell us kind of how that happened and what you were up to.
Well, we were taking a little bit of a break from Queen because although we're very grateful for what had happened, you know, we'd established ourselves kind of around the world, but we're slightly getting on each other's nerves, I guess. And, you know, you get a time when you just know you've got to take a break and breathe some air. And I woke up one morning in LA, which is one of my favorite places in the world, and I feel kind of more alive in LA. I don't know how you feel, but I just got on the phone and talked to a few mates and said, how about going in the studio and just doing something for the fun of it? Not because we want to make a record, just because we want to play together. Because all of us in our separate groups, and I'm talking about Ed Van Halen from the Van Halen group, who's amazing, incredible, beautiful player, sadly gone now from us. Alan Gratzer from REO Speedwagon, also amazing drummer for an amazing group. And Fred Mandel, keyboard player who'd worked with Queen a little bit on Radio Gaga and stuff. And delightful Phil Chen, Caribbean Cockney, who played on a lot of Rod Stewart records. So these we're all different people in different groups, and we very seldom get out of our place where we play. You know, so suddenly I said, let's just go in. So we did. That's the long story cut short. We went in for 2 days with a little bit of a plan from me, a little bit of a template. I had this song which was the theme tune of a science fiction TV series for kids on Saturday mornings called Starfleet, and my little five-year-old boy, Jimmy, at the time, said, you know, Dad, this is really nice, you know, and I said, I could do that. I could play that song. I wanted to make it a rock epic. So we go in there and we do it. This is 1983, and in the end, we did put it out, and it did quite well, but it's kind of, it's a long time ago, so people haven't heard it these days. I wanted to put it out there and take it to a new generation. It's a box set of all the stuff we did. Now, that's the crucial thing. What I did at the time was put out the kind of the result, but this time I'm putting out every take of every song we did. So it's like a glimpse backstage into the studios at the time. You can hear us larking about, making mistakes, and just the general vibe of people discovering each other. It was a great moment in my life.
And how did the rest of the band react when this new music came out?
I don't think they could care less, really. we're all doing our own thing, you know, and so we genuinely did kind of disappear to the four corners of the earth and just get on with stuff. And it was great because we were all refreshed when we came back to being Queen again. And, you know, you're coming back sometime, I think it's the sort of One Vision time, and Live Aid and all that sort of stuff, you know. So it was a good time for me to get out there and just get refreshed, do stuff in a different place with different air to breathe.
And was there ever a sense that you wouldn't come back? You know, did you need to leave each other in order to miss each other? Like when you said, oh, this is a break, were some of you thinking, yeah, break, I'm not going back?
Well, I think you have moments of thinking, oh, God, I can't deal with this anymore. There must be better out there. You know, grass is greener. But I think we had a good consciousness of the fact that together as a band, we had a lot more power than separately. And we had something amazing going on. I think we were conscious of that, even though it was painful and pretty gruesome at times. You know, we really got under each other's skins at times. It was hard, but it's like a marriage. You know, you know you kind of love each other, but you actually sometimes want to kill each other.
Tell me this now. We're going to play a bit of Starfleet. What you've done, you've remastered some tracks. Is that right?
Well, I actually did a lot more than that this time. I remixed everything because I didn't like the sound of the original mix. It was done in a hurry. So I've done it very much state of the art. And we transferred all the original analog tapes. Of course, they were in those days. There was no digital. There was no mobile phones. There was no internet. It's hard to imagine this, isn't it, Graham? But what I haven't done is tuned things. I haven't gone, you know, gone in there and put things on a grid or whatever. It's all still live and dangerous because I wanted people to hear the chemistry, the process, the business of like trying this and it doesn't work and then try something else. That it's all on there. You can hear this all in the box set. So you're sitting in this beautiful studio, the Record Plant, as it was in those days, in Los Angeles, 1983, with me, Ed Van Halen, Alan Gratzer, and the guys, and this is what happens.
Brian, there is such energy and that sense of just young men reveling in their own kind of talent and brilliance. It must bring back such happy memories.
It really does. Very nostalgic for me. It's amazing. It was so full of joy and adrenaline. We're just enjoying each other's company. And it brings it all back. And of course, that magnificent solo is not me. That's Ed Van Halen doing his incredible stuff, like he did for Michael Jackson on Beat It. He just came in and I wanted to give him that platform to just let rip. Very seldom that he stepped outside the group to do that. So I feel very honoured that this happened at all.
Well, that whole thing, it's a big box set, all of that material, that is out now. We should also say you have an extraordinary exhibition at Proud Galleries in London. It's running till the 23rd of September, and it's Queen Will Rock You in 3D. So what do people see when they get to the Proud Gallery?
Well, they see a lot of stuff. They see some history of 3D as well, going back to the 1850s, and they see Queen in 3D because I took my 3D camera with me on tour all the time that we were having those glory days and whatever, and I still do. And 3D is something magnificent. I'm an evangelist. I just think everything should be in 3D because why would you not do that if you can make a beautiful three-dimensional image as opposed to a flat image that you put on the wall? Why wouldn't you do it all the time? So go there and get immersed in 3D stuff and you will see, yes, you'll also see We Will Rock You and the cast of We Will Rock You looking like live in 3D, like you could touch him on stage. Also, luckily, you can go and see the real thing. You can go and see just up the road as we were in the Colosseum. Yeah, I hope you've been, Graham. If not, you've got to come.
I have, of course, I've been. It's a lovely, it sounds like the perfect day out. But tell me this, what people are seeing, are they seeing 3D photographs?
That's right, 3D photographs, yeah. Done in the Victorian way, which hasn't actually been bettered. You know, it's something like Avatar, but, you know, better.
And so the camera you were on tour with, like, so that technology hasn't changed. That technology is still the same.
Well, it hasn't changed that much since the 1850s. It's been refined a little bit, but basically it's about getting your left eye to see something different from your right eye. So you use some kind of device to make that happen. And then you get this incredible reconstruction, which happens in your brain, where you see the universe in a real way, in real depth. So I love it. I've always been kind of an advocate of it ever since I got a card in a Weetabix packet which showed me a 3D hippopotamus.
I'm sure, Brian, a lot of people have asked you about this then. Have you been to see the ABBA Voyage, the kind of whatever that is? I don't know whether it's 3D or holograms.
No, I haven't yet, but I definitely would like to, yeah. I mean, I actually love ABBA, I've got to say. You know, as tunesmiths, they're unequaled really in this. In their century, you know. Yeah, I'd love to see it, and I will see it, definitely go and see it. We've messed with stuff like that for Queen. We've talked about and looked at very seriously holograms of Freddie and stuff, but so far we haven't done it because I think the emphasis with us is always being live. So we have a little bit of stuff of Freddie. You know, I don't know if you remember, but I do Love of My Life generally, and Freddie comes in and joins me at the end when we do our live shows. But it's not a hologram. It's just kind of old school technology, which we kind of like. Nevertheless, I can't wait to see the ABBA thing. I'm sure they've done a brilliant job.
I think it might give you ideas, Brian, because it does feel live. It's a very... See what you think. It'll be interesting to see who does it next, because clearly, you know, there's going to be a big legacy band like Queen or like Bowie. Somebody else is going to do it next. I don't know who. But Queen would seem prime candidates for it with your back catalogue.
We would in a sense, but I mean, in a sense, the thing is, I guess we are still a live band, and I think that's the emphasis on us. Really, ABBA don't want to go out and play live anymore, and actually, they never did that much playing live. Although they're a wonderful band in the studio, but for us, the live thing is it. And I think if we had too much holograms and stuff going on, people would stop realizing that with us, it's live and dangerous with no backing tracks, no clicks, no nothing. We'd love to be live and dangerous, that's it. So I think that's our emphasis for the time being. Now, when we're all gone, yeah, sure, make an ABBA thing about us. You know. While I'm here, I want to play live. I don't want to be a hologram. Be me.
But if people can't see you playing live, they can hear all the music in We Will Rock You. There's a new production at the London Coliseum that's playing on the 27th of August. And so Ben Elton is in this production.
He is. The writer and producer and creator is in it, yeah, for a limited period only. I can't believe he's done this, doing 8 shows a week. I mean, he's put his whole life on hold to just go in there and, I was going to say, be a lovey, be an artist on stage, you know. And he's incredible. He's amazing. Of course, nobody can interpret his script like he can. And the show's twice as long, but, you know, No, I'm joking.
Angela Scanlon on the Graham Norton Radio Show.
Virgin Radio.
Time to meet my second guest of the day. He is Sir David Suchet, freshly knighted, fairly freshly.
Yes, well, it was announced 2 years ago, but I was only recently, about 2 weeks ago, actually dubbed.
Oh, well, congratulations.
Thank you very much.
I mean, what a thrill.
Yeah, I am. I'm so thrilled. And all the cliches are there. I'm honoured and humbled. And it's great to be. And you know what I'm thrilled about? It's a knight bachelor, which goes right back to the Middle Ages and to the medieval knights on the battlefield and all that sort of thing. It's not an order of the British Empire like Edwardian or Victorian. This goes right the way back. And I think that's wonderful. It appeals to my romantic nature.
And you worked your way through the ranks because you were you were an MB first or an OB first?
I was an OB, then I got the CB, and now I got the KB. So,
oh, lovely.
I'm very lucky, buddy.
Well, congratulations.
Thank
Sir
you
David
very,
Suchet.
Very much.
And what you're doing now is a departure for you. Have you ever been in a musical before?
No, this is an absolute first. I'm not going to say my actual age on over the air, but at a certain age, to have a first is a great treat.
Yeah,
I would say.
But isn't it great though? Because you're gonna, as you get older, you kind of think, oh, you know, everything's happened. But no, there are still new things.
Yes, I'm still new things, and I'm going to be in this gala night at the Cadogan Hall, February the 28th, of a musical called Mima. It was actually done a few years ago in Perth, had a run. It never moved because then COVID came up and all the rest of it. And we're going to put this on like, it's not going to be a full theatre performance. We're going to have scripts, but a lot of it, we've got the most fantastic singers. We've got John Owen Jones. We've got Celinda Schoenmaker, Louise Dearman.
Oh, yes.
So absolutely, we've got, the great leading singers from The Phantom of the Opera, Les Mis, Wicked. We've got top line singers who are going to really tell us the story about the Italian Civil War and fascism. So, you know, Les Mis was the French Revolution.
Yeah.
And now we've got this fantastic musical, a great eclectic music itself, talking about the Spanish Civil War.
And tell me this, so Mima is the central character and she leaves Italy. She comes to...
Yeah, it's a fictional character. She leaves Italy, Turin, to come to Lorenzo's nightclub in London, in Charing Cross Road. That's a family relation. And at that time, it's announced that war with Mussolini has joined the Nazis. And suddenly, all the Italians in London get arrested and put in internment camps. I think this is a bit of history that we know very little yeah. about. We know about, we're going way back, we know about the Nazis, we know about what happened with the Russian Revolution, we know about the French Revolution. Who knows about the Italian Revolution? It's been a great privilege for me to actually read up and learn about it and to actually play the only character that actually existed, Alfredo Frassati, who owned this great newspaper, La Stampa, and was forced to sell it off way back before the war in the mid-20s because it was anti-fascist.
And you narrate the story, is that right?
I do, yes. I narrate. I only come into the story as a character at the very beginning and the very end. But throughout the evening, because it is a gala-type performance, I'm narrating little bits that you don't see or explaining bits that you do see.
So if it was fully staged, you know, if it gets picked up and it's in the West End, does your character disappear?
I think he probably might. I think he probably might. But it's just wonderful. You know what? You get to a stage, you go into a rehearsal room, and suddenly, instead of my normal peers, I'm listening to the most incredible singers. Yeah. It takes my breath away. And the ensemble, they're dancing and they've learned dances in 3 or 4 days that I would take months to learn. It really is. It's wonderful.
They are like different creatures, musical yeah. theatre people, aren't they?
Yeah.
It's just that what they can do and make it look so easy.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I think one dance was learned in about 3 hours.
Wow.
And they're so disciplined and so committed. It's wonderful.
Now, it says in my little brief here that the club she goes to, Lorenzo's Nightclub, is a jazz club. But then I think maybe it was a different... It can't be a different meme of the musical, but I saw a bit on Facebook and it sounded quite operatic.
Yes. Well, the great thing about this show, and I must say that the numbers are so catchy, we've got, operetta, we have jazz, we have... Well, it's not modern music, but they're all mix and match. It's not just one style. And I think that's one of the great, great pluses for this particular musical. And on when we do it on February the 28th, we've got the whole BBC orchestra.
And you're raising money for charity.
Yes, for the Prince's Trust, which is fantastic.
So that is Mima the Musical at Duggan Hall, 28th of February. And as you say, I mean, amazing cast. The full BBC orchestra, that will... I mean, you're not going to hear... Even if it gets transferred to the West End, you're never going to hear it like this again.
No, and I've got to be very careful because not being in it but narrating, I might lose my place because I'm so, because I'm enjoying it so much.
This is very good. So what's the idea? So it played in Perth as a...
As a full show. And it was very, very successful. And I think, you know, if this gets picked up, and there's no reason why it shouldn't, and I'm in the rehearsal, so I'm not saying this just because I'm in it, it really deserves to be picked up. This could have a run like Les Mis, because it's that sort of passion and in an area of revolution and resistance in a period of history. It's great, really great.
And how are you feeling about work? Because what happened to you in lockdown? Were you doing any filming or...?
No, I like most of my profession, was appearing on shows remotely, but not doing much work. I did the odd voice, you know, by remote. But it was a tough 2 years for everybody in my business. And recently, I've had the privilege of travelling around doing my one-man show, David Suchet, Poirot and More, and a retrospective about my career, which we took to 24 different regions in the UK to try and encourage people back to the theatre. And we've been doing... That was nearly 4 months that I did, from September to just recently now.
And was that your decision to sort of say bye-bye Poirot, or had it kind of run its course, or how did it happen?
Well, a very interesting question, Graham. I was actually offered to continue doing Poirot, but not stories by Agatha Christie. And I had to think about that for a long time. And you know what? I was Agatha Christie's Poirot. And I thought to myself, 25 years... Let's quit while you're ahead.
Yeah. And also, that thing is, you could have said yes, and some of them could have been great, but you might have got a, you know, you could, yeah. There's no guarantee they'd be...
There's no guarantee. And if it started to go sour on me, that would have been dreadful. And it was a hard decision, difficult one, but I know it was the right one.
And it is weird because I imagine you living in Poirot's beautiful Art Deco apartment.
Yes, they do. I was once, I haven't said this before, but I was once asked to advertise a studio in that block of flats dressed as Poirot. I was, and I did.
He's not proud.
No, no, no. He'll do anything for money.
It's good, honest work. And do you miss it now? Because that character's not going anywhere. Someone else, I mean, I know Kenneth Branagh's doing the films, but someone else is going to do the TV. What is that going to be like when you see it?
Well, I haven't seen any of Ken's, actually, by the way. But
it's very different, let's put it that way.
Yes. and it should be. This character is going to go on and on. He's one of the most famous literary characters. So, we go right back to the 30s and 40s. Charles Laughton and people played him. And Poirot will continue because he's just one of those characters. Like James Bond, he will go on and on and on. And I'm looking forward to seeing new Poirots on television. I am. I'm looking forward to that character carrying on. You know, I was for now, and there will be others in the future, and that's right. That's good.
I suppose it is odd, you know, that I think the BBC just said they're making another Great Expectations.
Yes.
And you think, really?
Yes, I know.
As you get older, you kind of think, didn't they just make that?
Yeah, but you see, in the classical theatre, how many times... I was 13 years with the Royal Shakespeare Theatre. How many times have those been plays been on? And there's always a new take, new director, and it's good. We need to see these.
And I read that you were in the National Theatre, or the Royal Shakespeare Theatre, for 13 years. Was that typical back then, that people would stay for that long?
I was one of the last of the boys, if you like, that started as a spear carrier and ended up playing roles like Iago, Shylock, Bolingbroke and all the rest of it. And it was a 13 years. It doesn't happen anymore.
And I imagine at the time it flew by. You weren't conscious of the fact that, I've been here forever.
No. In fact, when I first courted my wife, Sheila, well, the first date, we said, what's your ambition? It was to be a member of one of the National Theatre Companies. And there I was, 13 years. Then all of a sudden television came up, film came up and moved on. But I loved it. I had the most wonderful time.
And now musicals.
And finally, now a musical.
Finally, he's arrived in the world of musicals.
We've been amongst royalty really this weekend, and I will be back with you next weekend here on the Graham Norton Radio Show with Waitrose, with more highlights from Graham and some lovely grub, I hope, from show chef Martha. She always delivers, doesn't she? And it's free. I'll come back again. In the meantime, make sure you're up to date with us on all of the socials. At Virgin Radio UK is where you find us. If you're a YouTube bunny, search Virgin Radio for all of the full interviews. See you soon.
Angela Scanlon on the Graham Norton Radio Show.
Virgin Radio.